This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast. Welcome to the Bring Your Product Idea to Life podcast. This is the podcast for you if you're getting started selling products or if you'd like to create your own product to sell. I'm Vicky Weinberg, a product creation coach and Amazon expert. Every week, I share friendly, practical advice as well as inspirational stories from small businesses. Let's get started. Hello. So today on the podcast, I'm talking to Amy Rabaru. Amy is founder of the Retail Business Hub and Scale with Wholesale Academy. Amy is a retail business consultant and product strategist. Amy has actually joined me on the podcast before. She was speaking about selling your products wholesale. And I've invited her on again to talk about another subject that I know Amy is really passionate and knowledgeable about, and that is pop-up shops. So some of you may have heard of pop-up shops. In fact, I'm sure a lot of you have. Maybe you've shopped at one, maybe you've sold your products in one. And today, Amy and I talk all about how it's done. So we cover what a pop-up shop is, the different methods of running one. We actually talk about how you can create your own if you can't find opportunities local to you or even not local to you, because Amy explains that you don't necessarily have to look for pop-up shops that are in your own location. So hopefully this will give you something else to think about. And if you do decide that pop-up shops is something you want to try, it'll give you lots of information on things to consider and how to go about it. So I would love now to introduce you to Amy. Hi, Amy. Thank you for being here again.
Thank you for having me, Vicky.
So we've invited you back to talk about pop-up shops. But before we do that, can you just give a little reminder of who you are and what you do, please?
Yeah, of course. So thank you so much for having me here. I'm a former buyer turned retail business consultant, and I help product businesses start, grow and scale. I specialise in helping product brands to approach, pitch and sell into retailers.
Amazing, thank you. So I've invited you here to talk about pop-up shops because I know it's a topic that you love. But what I would love to know from you, Amy, is where did that come from? Why did you get so interested in them?
Yeah, thank you. It's absolutely one of my other favourite subjects. And yeah, I do have a great story to tell. And when I suppose it came from when I left my corporate buying career in 2015-ish. I started a fashion brand. That's one of the first things I did when I left my corporate buying career. And I didn't really, it was one of those things that was just off a whim. I didn't really have a proper plan or a, you know, any kind of documented business plan or anything like that, which is really bad, I know. I just had a really great idea. I jumped on a plane to see one of the factories that I'd had a long-standing relationship with anyway, designed a collection, and that was literally how it started. So when it arrived, of course, I had to sell it. And I think this story, as a brand founder, still surprises clients, especially given what I teach retail brands to do. And when my collection arrived, I didn't really have any kind of strategy apart from good old Instagram. I'd already started an Instagram page whilst my collection was being manufactured, and I started actually building up quite a nice following from it. So of course, when it arrived, it really did start to feel real. And I knew, obviously from my retail background, that to be successful in a retail product business, I needed to not only sell it, but sell it fast and turn that stock around. I didn't have a website for first 2 years of the launch of my product business. And because I'd spent all of my money into building my first collection, it wasn't really a priority at the time. It probably should have been. So anyway, I got in touch with someone who owned a jewellery brand. She also lived close to me, and I asked her if I could have a stall at her next pop-up event. So she was really great at organising these events, and she became sort of well-known to me. She took me on, And my first event with her was an absolute phenomenal success. I couldn't believe how well customers had received the range, and my sales were also great. And that very next month, I was back on that plane to see the factory again to plan production for loads more stock. So, you know, in that first 2 years, all of my revenue came from physical pop-up shops and on-the-ground collaborations and events. And once I knew how powerful this was, I continued that strategy for my business. And it literally catapulted my growth, my brand awareness. And it was all from physical retail, physical pop-up shops. And it elegantly kind of built my community of loyal customers. Just that sort of good old fashioned getting out there. And after I'd done a couple, I started collaborating with the lovely Dee, who's now my friend. And I was doing pop-up shops with her. She's my pop-up partner in crime. And we started arranging pop-up shops. And of course, then I finally launched my website. I already had a lovely community of loyal followers ready to buy from me.
That's amazing. Oh, I like that story. Thank you for sharing. Out of curiosity then, so were your pop-up shops all in the same area? Or were you moving around with them?
Yeah, it's funny, actually. I did start locally and I started building up my clientele locally very much. And that worked because people would come back and see me over and over again. And then the bigger my brand grew, I started branching out and actually started going to other locations and then collaborating with local brands who already had an audience so that I didn't have to start from scratch. So, yeah, it played into a great sort of first strategy locally for me, but then I was able to take that almost take that model and then build it nationally as well.
Oh, that's exciting. I've got lots of questions about how that works logistically, but I think we'll come on to that actually, because I know there are lots of different models of pop-up shops, because I'm assuming that you weren't just driving around the country with a van and setting up. So in a moment, we'll talk a little bit more about the logistics and some of the different ways pop-ups can work. But what I'd like to just cover, and I know this is a really silly question, and I'm sure everyone listening knows the answer, but just in case, because no one wants to be the one to ask, so I'll be the one to ask, what is a pop-up shop? How would you sum it up, Amy?
Great question, actually, Vicky. So in a nutshell, as the name suggests, it's a sort of a temporary retail space that is used to sell products, even services, for a short period of time. And we often see this used by businesses to create unique and exciting shopping experiences for their customers, enabling the brand to connect their customer journeys.
Thank you. I'm actually a big fan of these as well. I've had some products in them, and I also love it if I see one, I'm desperate to go in, because you just know it's going to be lots of smaller brands that you might not necessarily find in a department store or somewhere else. So I, as a consumer, I think it's a great way of like finding things that you might not otherwise come across.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the prospect of just walking into one and discovering so many unique brands all under one roof. I think it's a great, great way. And I think that's why customers love them, and that's why they're so popular.
So let's get back and talk about some of the logistical things, if that's okay, Amy, because you mentioned that first of all, you were running pop-ups local to you, and then you were running them over the country. And as I say, I'm fairly sure you're going to tell me you weren't just driving around with your van and setting up everywhere. So what are some of the different models of pop-up shops? So what are different ways in which they operate?
So that's really funny, because I was driving around in a van and when I was a small business. And yeah, I mean, my husband was Team B, and as we got bigger, we did have to hire, you know, much bigger vans and think about our operations and logistics a little bit more. And what I was doing was daily or weekend pop-up shops. So I was not doing a sort of long-term pop-up shops, but a really great question to lead on to that. I can see you surprised.
Well, I think that's really good just for people to know, because I have been of the assumption, and this is why like our own personal experiences always play into it so much. So the only pop-up shops I've ever had my products in are the ones where you commit to maybe a month. Either the shop's open for a month, or it's going to be open for a while and you say, oh, I want a month, or I want a week, or whatever. Yeah. And in both of those instances, one of them was local to me and I had to bring stock in. And the other one was one where they didn't want you to turn up. They wanted you to ship it to them. And
they were going to do all the merchandising. And that was great because that one was in Brighton. That would have been hard for me to get everything down there. Mm. So that's really interesting that we've had really different experiences. So I think that's why it's great to talk about some of the different ways these might run, because I guess it's not going to be viable for everybody to travel around with their stock. Yes. But then there are going to be others for whom it's really important to actually be there. So let's talk about through some of the different ways they might work.
Absolutely. And I think there's so many different ways, and no one should feel like it's doing a pop-up shop is not accessible to them. And there's several different models like you suggested. And I think the first, which is very much what I did, was collaborations with other brands. So this is where you can hire a venue or a retail space for a day, or if you wanted to do it as short as that, put out a collaborative pop-up event with other businesses. And this kind of model is incredibly popular in the small business community, as this model enables you to share the cost and, of course, other people's audiences, which is a huge benefit. And it was a huge factor for me as well in terms of the success. And the next model, I suppose, following on from that, is that you can take a short-term lease on an existing retail space. Most of the, whether the organisers will want the brand to run it or not is, again, there's variations on that kind of model, this model as well. But it can be like on a high street or a shopping centre. And typically we see this anywhere from, a few days to 1 month. And we typically see larger D2C brands use this kind of model, or someone who is sort of, running a collaborative pop-up event, but leading the event. And I suppose there's an extension to both of those. The other models around this include things like pop-up, organised pop-up events, space in existing retailers, markets, and experiential pop-up shops. And in this space, we are seeing that more sophisticated setup where companies would lease the space, lead the curation of the brands, and essentially sell space within that shop or retail space to smaller brands. And for us, those smaller brands, that saves the headache of putting an event together
and organising it. That's great, thank you. And I think even within that, there are, the way these are run, there are some differences, aren't there? Because I know that I've had my shops and my shops, my products in shops that have expected me to be there to sort of be a presence and talk to people and answer questions about the brand. But I've also had products in shops where they're happy for you to pop in from time to time, but what they really want is to hire their own sales team, and maybe they want a brief on your brand and your products, but actually they'd rather be responsible for the selling. And then of course there are some differences, aren't there, in how much of, do they take a percentage, do you pay for the space, and there's a lot
there's lots of variations within that. Some will want you to do both pay a nominal fee for the space and then take a percentage, and some will take a percentage, and if it's that, then it's likely to be a higher percentage, but there's so many different variations within those models that I talked about.
We'll talk about that a little bit later, and about what to think about if you're looking for an opportunity. Yeah, sure. But I mean, you've covered a lot of this already, actually, in terms of why we might consider using a pop-up shop. So what are some of the other benefits? Is there anything we haven't yet talked about that would be a really good reason for someone to consider this?
Yeah, so I think, pop-up shops offer several benefits, actually, and so many, actually. And they do include some of the things that we've talked about, like increased brand exposure. They essentially provide the opportunity to reach new customers and expand brand awareness quickly, which is great. And, we're all fighting our algorithms and, online space at the moment. But it's a great way to also drive customer loyalty and spend with existing customers. It's one of the things that I found work really well when I was doing them. Connecting with customers has got to be the biggest benefit of all. Physical retail is still stronger than digital retail, and us humans need to have that tactile experience of being able to physically touch and feel the products and experience the brand and the founders from which they're buying from. It's also a great way of testing new products as well.
That makes a lot of sense. And when you talk about touching and feeling the products, so one of the products I used to sell was baby towels, and they sold really well online, but they sold out every time I had them in a physical environment because people could feel them and they could feel how soft they are. Because it's hard to put into words how soft something is. But I found that when people could actually physically touch them, it was much easier to sell. And I think there are lots of examples of products that actually will always perhaps sell a bit better in person because you can't show, you know, you can have the best photography and fantastic product descriptions, but there's nothing quite like being able to touch and feel a product, is there?
Totally. And it's like beauty products, and that's why they do so much better in physical retail, because the customer wants to try things, they want to see, you know, they want to touch and feel and put things on their skin and see how it feels. And yeah, it's like scents as well, like candles and home fragrance. So there's some product that struggle online, but most definitely a great way is to start, at least connect customer journeys and, you know, a part of your strategy to be physical retail in some way, shape or form.
And this feels like a really nice option if you're, for whatever reason, not quite ready to think about wholesaling your products, but you'd like to see how well they do in a store, what feedback you get from customers. I think this could be a really nice way of testing the waters, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, to your point, Vicky, they are absolutely great for allowing businesses to test not only new products, but also to test new markets and to gather that kind of information on consumer behavior and how people, you know, how, what people are saying about your products firsthand before investing into new products. Again, it enables the brands to test things before they have to invest in a new range or anything like that. And of course, they're cost effective as well. You know, if you want a physical presence, they're going to be way more cost effective than a traditional brick and mortar store, as they obviously require less overhead. And they can be turned around in a short amount of time, allowing that business to have that all-important agility. And it makes them great for smaller brands and also online pure play retailers. You know, that's the other thing we didn't really talk about, where we're seeing a lot of, whether e-commerce pop-up shops is the right word, but a lot of, you know, essentially a model where online pure play retailers are looking to bring their digital presence into the real world. And it's a great strategy to engage and connect customer journeys. And this type of model can be a mix of pop-up or just where they're creating some really great experiential type campaigns. We've seen a lot of that where they're not actually selling goods, but they're just creating engaging experiences for customers, which is becoming more and more popular and a very, very exciting way to rethink retail.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm 100% convinced. I think it's a great option. So how might we go about finding opportunities for pop-up shops? I mean, you mentioned that there's obviously one way is that you collaborate with other brands and you arrange something yourself. So let's start there. If that's something someone were interested in, how might you go about actually doing that?
Yeah. So I think to find pop-up shops opportunities, I think, do start by researching local events and brands or markets. Ask your fellow small businesses. And of course, social media has got to be the number one way to find out what's going on, not just locally, but nationally. Also by customer demographic, because I think that's one of key considerations really when you're thinking about a pop-up shop. And obviously the internet's a great way to find opportunities as well.
Thank you. And so we talked about all the different ways these are run, the kind of different models, whether that's from payments or how you get your stock there or whether you get to do your own merchandising. What are some of the things you think people need to know before you say, yes, I'm going to sign the contract and put my products into this store? What are some of the things that you need to be really clear on, would you say?
Yeah, and I think what a lot of brands miss on this, Vicky, it's a really good point, is actually having a really clear strategy, or at least to have someone help you with your retail strategy for your pop-up shop. Too many brands go into pop-up shops blind and then they don't come out with the results that they imagine that they would get. So firstly, I would say that you absolutely have to consider, from all the formats that we talked about, all the different ways and all the different models, decide on which type of pop-up shop you would like to do. You'll decide on that depending on what kind of brand you are and what kind of complementary collaborations you can find. Absolutely, really, really important is location. and the target demographic that is around that location for the event. It's also important, particularly if you are renting an existing retail shop like space, then it's really important to look at the kind of foot traffic that you would get, because, you know, you don't want to do all the advertising yourself, especially if you are renting an existing space, because you're likely to be paying a premium for that. And of course, things like looking at your budget, determining your budget for the pop-up shop, and don't forget things like, obviously there's the cost of renting, which is the biggest cost, but don't forget the costs for space, decor, and your marketing plan as well, because that marketing is the second biggest cost that it can have. And I think just my general, you know, just from experience, is treat it like a new project in your business. Look at things like, you know, exactly how you would if you were running, you know, working out a business plan. You would look at your local competition in your product category, consider your brand positioning within that place, and how your competition might affect your product ranging, pricing, and promotions.
Thank you. And when you spoke about competition, a question pops into my head, which I'm sorry, because this only just came to me, so you're not going to be prepared for this one, Amy, I should warn you. It just occurred to me, would something be to consider what other brands and products might be in the same store as you? The reason I ask this is I remember years ago, there used to be a range of pop-ups that used to happen local to where I live. They used to be once a month, I think. And it was more like a market, really. Yeah. Different brands could have a stall to sell their products. And I remember there was I don't want to say an issue, but there was definitely a situation where the organizer of the event was having to limit the number of brands selling certain products. So, for example, an event has happened and there were five people selling candles. And apparently afterwards, all of those people said, well, we shouldn't have all been here because we're all selling essentially the same thing. I mean, good to know your take on that anyway. But I remember that these events became so strict that you could only have one person selling candles and one person selling jewelry. And it kind of went down that route, which was interesting. So I'd love to know your thoughts on that, whether it's okay to be, you know, in a category where there'll be lots of people selling similar products, whether you would steer clear of that. And I'm sure the answer's somewhere in between, but I'm just quite curious what you think.
Yeah, no, it's a problem that I come across a lot. And it's actually a problem that I help people who are doing pop-up shops, you know, brands and businesses. And it's something I actually consult on because it is a real problem. And what ends up happening is the brands who are taking part feel hard done by because there are too many X amount of brands selling jewellery or candles or, you know, some of those popular categories. And that happens a lot. And really, you know, if you want to run a successful pop-up shop that you are curating, you need to consider those factors. It's really, really important. You know, when you're curating a product range, you've got to think like a retailer. And that's why a retail strategy becomes really, really important. So yes, I would, you know, if I was a brand, I think, you know, on the flip, you know, flipping that question, I would really, really, you know, ask those sorts of questions to the curator and ask them what their strategy is to make sure that there isn't product overlap, that we're not cannibalizing each other. You know, how do they decide on how many different brands, how many brands that they have in the same category? I think those are all really important questions to ask because it could make or break the success of your participation in a pop-up shop, and it's not fair.
Absolutely. I mean, that was definitely the sense I got from these events. Yeah. That people were very upset, and you can understand why, because I'm sure that everyone missed out on that, which is a shame. Is there anything else that we need to know or do perhaps before we put our products in a pop-up shop? It's seeming to me like information is key. So we need to make sure we're really prepared and we know the setup, we know how we're going to be paid, we know what's expected of us, we know who else is there. Is there anything else we need to know? And yeah, anything we need to do or prepare?
I think something that you touched on earlier was logistics, actually, which is a really good point. And yes, I was driving around in a van. I know that will make you laugh. I think it's really important to consider not only logistics, but the costs associated with it as well. So, you know, knowing that upfront and building that into your cost strategy and your plans, it will help you to work out what success might look like in terms of your profit goals, and how you're going to manage stock, and if it's a long-term pop-up shop, how you're going to manage inventory in terms of restocking your products and all that kind of thing, because that then becomes important, particularly in a long-term pop-up shop.
Absolutely. And I guess some of this plays into whether it's even viable, because it might be that actually the cost of having this space is X amount. But then when you look at actually you've got to do the merchandising and you have to do, you know, you have to do get your products there. And, you know, that it could end up being that actually it's not a viable option.
Yeah.
In some situations, because, of course, as you said, I think pop-up shops are they seem to be popping up everywhere. So I'm not saying that pop-ups in general might not be viable, but it might be that not every opportunity is viable for everyone.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, Vicky, this is the setup of pop-up shops, particularly for those who are curating and leading pop-up shops. It is starting to become a bit more sophisticated in that, you know, they are able to take on stock, manage it, warehouse it, and things like that. So it is starting to become more sophisticated. You will see more sophisticated operations out there now. So again, it just depends what you end up finding and where you want to go with it and what model you want to go with.
That's really interesting. And as they're getting more sophisticated, does that mean they're getting more expensive or not necessarily?
Probably, because it is essentially somebody else is managing all of the logistics for you. But it's kind of twofold. It's kind of beneficial for the brand, but it's also beneficial for the curator of the pop-up shop, because the curator never wants to run out of stock. And they want to understand their strategy. And this is the kind of thing that I'm consulting on at the moment with some brands. And they want to be able to control some of that, you know, and it's very hard, particularly when you're a small brand, to control what's coming in, what's going out, how much stock do I need to save for the pop-up shop, you know, all that kind of thing. So I think this is driven from the curators, really, of wanting more control, but it definitely does benefit the brand as well in terms of, well, they'll probably get payment up front, and you know, the pop-up shop organizer is starting to run it more like a retail shop, and thinking about it in a more sophisticated way.
And hopefully, yeah, and hopefully that means that the curator is also doing some advertising around the shop and things like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole strategy around, you know, building out that marketing plan and what that could look like. Yeah.
And as someone who might, you know, be taking space in a pop-up shop, what do you think your role is in that instance in terms of the marketing? Because I'm assuming that you still want to be, you know, you still want to be advertising the fact that, you know, there is a pop-up and that your shops are, and that your products are available, would you say?
Yeah, and I think it's a really important strategy to be involved in the marketing. And it's great for, again, it's great for both retailer and brand. It helps you build your brand awareness. And there's nothing like a great collaborative marketing plan that will help brands to, you know, acquire more customers and to be able to build out their brand awareness. So yeah, a marketing plan is really important, and it's important to be, you know, a good curator will involve all of the brands involved to be part of the marketing campaign for them, because that will drive audience, it will drive traffic to the pop-up shop as well, which also becomes important as well.
Amazing, thank you. So you've definitely given us some good tips whether you're looking to sort of place your products in an existing pop-up or maybe even run your own. Are there any final things you'd like to add for anyone thinking, well, actually, I'm not going to look for space, I'm actually going to do this myself, I'm going to find other businesses, I'm going to collaborate, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to do this, because I'm certain there'll be people listening who think, yeah, I could, I'd fancy doing this. What's any other advice you'd give to people in that situation?
Yeah, what things gosh, people absolutely need to can. Know? You absolutely can run your own pop-up shop. You know, it does take a lot more preparation, organization, and coordination as well. So you definitely need something, you definitely need a strategy for it. And you need to be able to determine your goals up front, your sales targets, financial stock management, all of that kind of thing, if you want to. Depends on what level you're doing it, really. But that the sort of KPIs become really important for the success of your pop-up shop if you're doing it yourself, because you want it to pay off not just for yourself, but also you then start taking on the responsibility of it's got to work for the brands that you're collaborating with as well, and so that becomes really important. Transparency, collaboration, all of those kind of things become super important when you're starting to run your own.
Thank you. And is there anything else that people particularly have to do or know before running your own? Is there anything, I'm trying to think of examples, but
yeah. We talked about product, didn't we, Vicky? About putting your products in pop-up shops as well. And I think you know, brands, particularly when they are doing pop-up shops for the first time, it's really important to really think about what your products are going to look like in that space. And I always say to brands that start by looking at how other retailers, and I always come at it from a retail buyer because that's what, you know, in my heart of heart, that's what I am, how other retailers are buying their products for their customers in your particular product category. And that's a great way to start building out your range for a pop-up shop. And if you think about it, retailers or retail buyers' job is to ensure that they have built this commercially balanced range, offering that just the right amount of choice, balanced with enough excitement to draw customers in, and enough of the core items, which essentially are the bread and butter for the retailer. And this balance of art and science forms a really big foundational part of your retail strategy, and it becomes your plan for what's going to bring the money in and help you to hit your sales targets and profit targets at the pop-up shop. So when you're putting your range together for a pop-up, some of the same principles apply, you know, when you're thinking like a retailer, and you must sort of consider those kind of things as well.
That's so helpful. Thank you. Mm. I'm trying to think if there's anything we haven't covered, Amy. I think we covered a lot of ground in this last half an hour. I'm trying to think, is there anything that we haven't spoken about? No, I think that could be it, Amy. Unless there's anything else, is there anything else that you wanted to share with us that I haven't asked you? Because I think we've got a lot out of you.
Yeah, no, I think you know, just in terms of following on from the product conversation that we just had, another great tip that I say this a lot, is less is more. Your ranging has to look visually appealing to the customer, not like a jumble sale, especially if you have a large product assortment. Don't be tempted to take everything. When you give customers too much to look at, you could leave them overwhelmed and confused. So you really should be showing them attention-grabbing statements in a memorable way. So you should be almost like you're telling them what they need to buy from you. So planning your space well becomes really, really important. Pop-ups are also great for creating that sense of urgency for customers to buy from you. So make sure that you are really thinking about your pricing and particularly your promotions to incentivize customers to purchase products and maybe even come back and buy some more. And the other thing that we touched on as well is so much of retail is about experiences. So consider how you can create experiences for your customers to help you really stand out from the crowd and the competition around you, particularly if it's a big kind of a pop-up shop. So yeah, some of those things are really important too.
That's really useful, thank you. And I think this will probably apply more if you are curating a pop-up, so you're arranging your own and you're inviting other brands in. But I'm assuming that there are people out there that you can get to help with things like merchandising. So for example, if I were to run a pop-up shop, I think I could find businesses. I don't think I have a problem with that. Find the space, yes. What I know I would really struggle with is making it look nice. Are there people that you can find to help you with aspects like that? Because I think if you're not a creative person, which I'm creative in some ways, but and I'm not going to run a pop-up shop at work. No, it's not immediate plan anyway. I'm asking this purely for anyone else out there in the same situation who thinks, you know, the only thing holding me back is I've got no idea how to set up a shop.
It is something, don't mean to blow my own trumpet, Vicky, but it is something that I help businesses with, more so bigger businesses, but it's something that I can certainly help with. And I think it's really important, again, you know, to plan your space well, consider graphics, POS, marketing messages, but also your product ranging, you know, what your good, better, best looks like, what your product range looks like, make sure it's not cannibalizing each other. And all of that is, it form, you know, forms part of a retail strategy. Yeah, that's something that I'm sure there's many people that can help with, but it's definitely something that I help with as well.
Amazing, Amy. Thank you. And you should blow your trumpet. That is one of the reasons you're here, to blow your trumpet.
Thank you.
So never be shy. That is good to know. And you have given so much good advice. I'm sure if someone has any questions, I'm sure you're happy for people to contact you if there's any
follow-ups
on this.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, amazing. So I've got one final question before we finish, Amy. What would your number one piece of advice be when it comes to pop-up shops? What's the key takeaway?
I think the key takeaway is absolutely plan your goals. So many people go into pop-up shops without really planning what they think they might get out of it, and then it doesn't go so well for them.
That's amazing. Thank you. Well, that's really good advice. I think that probably goes for 99% of things, doesn't it? And that's really useful because I can, I've been in a number of pop-up shops, never planned one of them.
My own story at the beginning tells you I didn't really plan it, but, you know, experience has taught me that
absolutely.
You must plan it.
Yeah, we learn these things from experience. Thank you so much, Amy.
Take care, Vicky.
Thank you so much for listening right to the end of this episode. Do remember that you can get the full back catalogue and lots of free resources on my website, vickyweinberg.com. Please do remember to rate and review this episode if you've enjoyed it, and also share it with a friend who you think might find it useful. Thank you again and see you next week. Hi, this is just a little note. So if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.